This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662. Or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and, well, time flies because once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. One of my favorite segments of Intelligent Medicine, because you never know what questions we're going to consider. These are questions that listeners email us via radio program at AOL.com, and it's an opportunity to hear from listeners and respond, and very often, a question that might be of relevance to you or to a loved one. So today we're with Hoffman Center nutritionist as usual, Layla Mudin. She's a registered dietitian. She has also earned an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition. How are you doing today, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Terrific.
So, in the news, Consumer Reports, yet another, scurrilous attack on supplements.
I am so not a fan. I don't even want to read that magazine anymore when we're ready to buy a new washing machine or a dishwasher or anything
like
that, honestly.
You, when you want to buy, like, an appliance, you know, you go to Consumer Reports and you see the ratings, you know, vacuum cleaners and so on and so on. But they, you know, unless there's a complete disconnect between their, between their assessment of appliances and the way that they handle supplements, they're going to lose credibility on the appliance and car ratings. Because what they did was, and we'll elaborate on this. I'm going to do an entire podcast on this, maybe an article breaking it down. They took 15 supplements that they said were dangerous. Well, about 10 of them are supplements that are just generally not in use. And we've, I think since the beginning of my career in integrative medicine, I've known that these are no-no supplements. Obscure
That's
things
sneaky.
Like aconite. I've never, aconite, have you ever
I don't even know what that is.
You don't even know what it is. Actually, it's an ingredient in a homeopathic remedy that is sold, but it's homeopathic, so it's like infinitesimal amounts. Yeah, I mean, if you take pure aconite, I mean, at a high dose, you're going to get toxic.
Sounds like kryptonite. Sorry.
Right, it's, exactly. It's like from a Superman movie. Germander. Who uses germander?
And is that an herb?
It's an herb that's been, you know, relatively banned for a long time. Then they make some mistakes. They say green tea, don't take that because too rich green tea can give you whatever.
Too much.
Liver failure or
If you eat enough green apples, you're gonna get a stomach ache. Well, what are we talking about here?
There is a bit of a caution on EGCG for people who have, cirrhosis or, you know, really serious liver problems.
Yeah.
But in my 30-year career, one of my favorite nutrients, EGCG, no problems whatsoever, so they don't know.
It's one of the most chemo-preventive nutrients on the planet, EGCG.
So we could run this down ad infinitum. I'll save that for another podcast. They also selected the people who were avowed foes of supplementation as their experts without any balance. You know, like on a news story, say we're talking something controversial, Hillary versus Donald, okay? You know, you got a statement from one camp, and, you know, I studied journalism in junior high school. I was on the junior high school paper, and I learned one of the principles of journalism is that you get, like, both sides. So one side alleges such and such. The spokesperson, you know, Hillary alleges this. A spokesperson for the Trump campaign, refutes this and denies it. Okay? So that's called balanced journalism. Even if you skew it to one side, I mean, frankly, a lot of newspapers will say, you know, 9/10 of the article is for one side, but at least a little, there's the semblance of balance. There wasn't even the semblance of balance in Consumer Reports.
Yeah.
And, so assailable, so, easily critiqued.
Yeah.
It's like child's play to critique their article.
I used to subscribe not just to the magazine, mm-hmm. which my husband and I enjoyed a lot for right. appliances and things.
Because he's wonky. He's like a very handy kind of guy.
Exactly.
He wants, like a power drill. He wants to know what's the best
right.
power drill, blah, blah,
right.
blah. Right.
I subscribed for a brief time only to their health newsletter. And it was very biased. I found out, it was a lot of supplement bashing there too.
Right.
So I canceled my subscription to that. But along with Consumer Lab, they are related, aren't they?
No, they're not.
They're not.
No.
Okay, so Consumer Lab is separate
yeah.
because
not to be
that's
confused
another...
with Consumer Lab, which has been criticized for sometimes the methods they use, which do not accurately reflect what's in the supplements.
Mm-hmm.
I pay some attention to what they say. But then, as an industry insider, I know a little bit more about how to analyze the content of supplements. And
right.
I think they're actually doing a little better job at consumerlabs.com than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I also criticize their business model, which is a bit of a pay-to-play business model. It's sort of like...
That's unethical.
Well, it's a little bit like... I mean, I'm not going to... This is an extreme analogy, but like the mafia, you know, coming by and saying, hey, you know, nice windows you got here, you know, for a couple hundred dollars a month, we can make sure those windows don't get broken. You know, so it's a little, Consumer Lab
yeah.
does sometimes hit up manufacturers for, fees, mm-hmm. Essentially for testing, products.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyway, but I'm less exorcised by Consumer Labs
mm-hmm.
that I think attempts to do a more balanced job than Consumer Reports. Completely biased.
I'm so disappointed, honestly.
Well, I'm beyond disappointed with them. I know what to expect when I see a Consumer Reports evaluation of any holistic modality. They're going to mm-hmm. come at it really negative. And the problem is they just are talking to one side. They're talking to a panel of people who are avowed supplement skeptics. Mm-hmm. Paul Offit, for example, the guy he wrote a book called Do You Believe in Magic?
Yes, remember?
Which is a clever yeah. title, I gotta admit, where he basically says that all of alternative medicine is BS, placebo effect, and, you know, magical thinking, and, you know, the true science is in pharmaceuticals and in vaccines, of which he's a recipient of, you know, easily $24, $25 million in
well, tens of thousands of people have been cured by this magical thinking, then, if that's the case. So, anyway.
I guess I believe in magic.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the Lovin' Spoonful. Speaking of old rock songs, one of the things that they indict in this Consumer Reports article is Pennyroyal. And
oh.
you know, that's a great song by Nirvana, Penny Royalty.
Yes.
It's like
yeah.
one of those really grunge, you know, dark songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nirvana did a better job on evaluating Penny Royalty. You know, Penny Royalty used to be used as an abortificant.
Yeah.
You know, in the days when abortions were less available,
mm-hmm.
people would drink Penny Royalty and we'd get terribly sick, but it would induce abortions, not
I think
reliably.
When you take it at the right time, it can also induce labor or speed up labor.
Yeah, but not
I think it's also
totally
been used
unsafe,
that way.
Totally dangerous,
yeah.
Never to be used.
Yeah.
And they mentioned that. Well, thank you. I already knew that 30 mm-hmm. years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Enough said. Let's get to questions.
Okay. We've got an email from Forrest. Dr. Hoffman, if I send in my saliva sample for DNA results, will I decisively know if milk is a problem for me?
Okay, so this harkens back to an article that I wrote about my own personal genetic testing.
Yeah, very interesting.
And it's complicated. Please go to drhoffman.com and read the complete article.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very complicated field because the genes are, for certain traits, are very mixed. So, for example, for intelligence, there may be like 70 or 100 different traits, genes that may be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's the effect of environment. So if you take someone who's got great genes and put them in a deprived environment, they may not reach their full intellectual potential. Or if you take someone who has a genetic deficit but enrich them, you can overcome that. So,
right.
you know, it's complicated. But for somewhat simple things like milk intolerance. Milk intolerance basically is a deficiency of the enzyme lactase,
mm-hmm.
which actually most of us are born with the capability of digesting.
Right.
But then it's one of those use it or lose it things.
Yeah.
And yet there are some populations that have a high persistence of lactose tolerance, such as Scandinavians and Celtic peoples, possibly because they have a long history of dairy cultivation.
Yes.
Many Turkic, Indo-Turkic people, you know.
Yogurt.
Yeah, in from Turkey, certain parts of the Middle East, Lebanon, and or India have genetically a longer persistence of the ability to digest lactose. Now, African Americans typically have a poor genetic capability to digest lactose. That's why a lot of the commercials for lactase feature African Americans, you know, enjoying ice cream. Have you noticed that?
Yes, and I think the Asian population too, to some degree.
To some degree, yeah, because they just, you know, they don't drink a lot of milk in Japan now, more so, but and in many parts of China. Although northern China is different than southern China. Southern China, not much. Northern China, more, you know, more. Mongolian influence.
Yes, where they had a lot of dairy.
Yak milk.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, which is another story.
It's mainstay, yeah.
So there is a gene that you can get from 23andMe that predicts whether you are likely to have lactose intolerance. I carry that gene. Mm. And in fact, I am lactose intolerant. Mm-hmm. But also, I stopped drinking milk, you know, in my teen years.
And that can also cause lactose intolerance.
Exactly.
As you said, it's a use it or lose it enzyme.
Another thing that causes lactose intolerance is if you, often after a gastroenteritis or a severe gastrointestinal infection, it wipes out your capability to digest milk. Sometimes permanently, sometimes temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, drinking milk is not a great thing. You know, if you just had Montezuma's revenge, you know, it's not going to help.
Right, right.
It's going to run right through you.
There are certain dairy foods that people who are lactose intolerant can actually tolerate to some degree, not everybody. Hard cheeses, because the lactose is practically insignificant. The other
low lactose dairy.
Mm-hmm. And yogurt, because so much of the probiotics in the yogurt have already gobbled up much of the lactose.
Well, that's why they call it lactobacillus. Mm-hmm. It is a lactose eating bacteria that actually breaks down the lactose into its constituent parts, which are glucose and galactose, two simple sugars, which then, you know.
Growing up, my mother always fed us yogurt if she was ever giving us a canned food like tuna.
Really?
So if we had tuna salad, she always gave us a bowl of jajuk, which is the savory yogurt with some garlic, with some cucumber. Not garlic for us kids, but as a preventive. Because she knew that the beneficial bacteria could possibly save us from foodborne illness from a food coming out of a can.
Wow.
This was her thinking.
Wow.
So there was loads of this yogurt in my life. We always ate yogurt as a savory. I didn't know what fruit yogurt was until I was a teenager. What do you mean, blueberry yogurt? What is that? We put garlic in it.
That was a way to get Americans to accept yogurt. You know, there was a time when they did a survey. I remember it was in the 80s, America's three most detested foods were tofu, chopped liver, and yogurt.
Yogurt, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So those foods, I mean, certainly tofu has achieved acceptance more now. And the way to get Americans to appreciate yogurt, which is sour tasting, it doesn't add, it's not sweet, is to sweeten it to the max and, you know, jam it up with
for anybody eating yogurt, you want to make your own jajuk, or in Greek, it's tzatziki, sauce.
Right.
You're using it as a savory. It's a sauce. It could be a sauce on your barbecued meats. On your roasted vegetables, your eggplant, your peppers, all of that, you take the yogurt, you add a little salt, some garlic, maybe grate some cucumber, or leave the cucumber out, a little mint, a little dill.
Wow.
It's a delicious sauce for those eating yogurt.
So for our listeners who are not aware, what is your national background? Is your Crimean?
Crimean Tatar. Both of my parents were born in the Crimea.
I'm sorry to hear about your country.
Yeah.
It just got taken over.
Who knows what's going to happen? I know.
Right.
Yeah.
But the Russians do need their naval base, so hey.
There you go. Right. It's strategic.
Yes.
What am I going to do?
I mean, a lot of wars have been fought over that part of the world.
It's true.
You know, it's like even the Brits were down there. That was where Florence Nightingale hung out. You know, Florence Nightingale, the prototypical nurse who went under very harsh conditions to support the British troops, I guess, that were fighting the Russians in the Crimean War. And that's, I think, has to do with the Charge of the Light Brigade. You know,
yeah.
That whole...
Wow. Yeah. The Russian Riviera. I've never been there myself, so I don't know. But I have lots of second and third cousins at this point. Well, my don't really know, unfortunately, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
And they all live to be 105 because they eat this yogurt.
They've been, I don't know, but they live long, yeah.
Okay. So we digressed a little bit,
yes,
as usual.
Yes, yes.
But a nice digression. Yeah. Let's go to the next question.
All right. Thank you, Forrest, for your question. This comes from Carrie. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm a huge fan of the show, and I've been known to binge listen on weekends. LOL.
Okay.
My husband had passed a kidney stone a couple of years ago. I took it upon myself to research natural remedies and came upon the herb Chanca Piedra.
Mm-hmm.
It has had astonishing results, and he has taken it daily as maintenance and prevention. Have you heard of it? Could you provide your thoughts on if it's safe?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that is synonymous with an herb referred to as gravel root in English.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard, I don't know much about it, I'm going to confess, and I think that this is an anecdotal report that's worth paying attention to. By the way, the word from my rudimentary Spanish that I learned in junior high school,
mm-hmm.
piedra, means stone.
Ah.
So chanca, I don't know, does it mean the stone crusher or crest?
Maybe, maybe it does. Well, I took a look at Global Healing Center's website.
Yeah.
Chanca piedra, or Phyllanthus niruri, is a well-known plant from the Amazon rainforest that has given naturopaths a powerful plant ally in supporting bladder, kidney, gallbladder, and liver health.
Okay.
And it's thought of as a health supplement to promote liver function, detoxification, and has been used by the indigenous peoples of the Amazon for generations to support the elimination of gallstones and kidney stones. Yeah.
So
in Ayurvedic medicine.
I have
yeah.
a question, though.
Yeah.
Why do Amazon Indians get a lot of kidney stones and gallstones? I thought those were more of a Western, those are more Western maladies.
Hmm.
I wonder if that's not
a terrific question.
What is called an apocryphal story, like a folkloric attribution.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I will say this, I think this is interesting, and I wish there was some real, mm-hmm. Double-blind placebo-controlled trials of this.
Yeah.
More a rigorous scientific research on the subject, or maybe even a mechanism of action, because I don't mm-hmm. quite understand how it prevents stones. But what does prevent stones? Citric acid.
Citric acid.
So we can give potassium citrate, which is a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
Magnesium citrate, which is over-the-counter.
What about calcium citrate?
Possibly okay. You know, because interesting, these stones are partly composed of calcium. Most of the
yeah.
stones are calcium oxalate. It turns out that it's the oxalate that is more of a contributor to stone risk than the calcium.
I see.
It's not that clear that taking some extra calcium supplements, unless you're taking massive amounts with
mm-hmm.
Too much vitamin D, can promote stones.
Right, right.
So
a low oxalate diet can
right.
also be helpful.
Also, one has to be careful of not taking too much vitamin D. That can promote stones.
That's
one
true.
Has to get one's parathyroids checked out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, avoid dehydration. Alcohol tends to promote stones.
More people tend to get stones, if they ever
summer.
Get them, in the summer from dehydration.
Part of the reason is that they get dehydrated, and then what is their beverage of choice? Beer, which further dehydrates you, ultimately. So
mm-hmm.
it's not an uncommon scenario that some guys playing like softball, you know, mm-hmm. In the summer.
But there's
and then
nothing
they go
like
for
a
beers.
Cold beer on a hot day.
Yeah, and they go, and then it's like, arr, I got the, you know, mm-hmm. terrible stones, which
yeah.
I hear is as bad as childbirth, you know. Just
that's what I've heard
thing.
Too.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
Renal
too.
Colic is horrible.
Oh. And, you know, very low carb diets have also been blamed for kidney stone formation. I think a reason for that is because the diet is very dehydrating.
Yes.
And you have to remember to get at least your 8 cups of water a day.
Good point.
So. Very, very important.
And, you know, this is an interesting sidelight. I recently saw an article about treatment of psoriasis with enormous amounts of vitamin D. You know, we're talking like 30,000 of vitamin D a day, which is much higher than I would recommend
yeah.
for routine supplementation. But for suppression of psoriasis, it may work at that level. But how do they pull it off? That could cause stone formation because it's so... But the sign of vitamin D toxicity among them is stone formation and calcification in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they get around that? They put those patients on a very low calcium diet.
Ah.
So the vitamin D has no calcium to act on to cause excess calcium formation. formation. They're monitored very carefully for calcium in the urine and for calcium in the bloodstream so they don't develop hypercalcemia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it, I don't know if that, that is not, please don't try that at home. I think that this is something that, really has to be respected as a unique protocol for.
And because it's such a high dose, it does warrant supervision.
Absolutely.
I would never.
Very careful and close supervision.
Yeah.
Right.
For psoriasis, I have found the best, for it to completely go into remission, not just the elimination of gluten. Gluten takes it away. Mm-hmm. Very good result. However, until they completely give up dairy, and I've seen this in 90% of the cases, so not even just the giving up of cow's milk casein,
right,
which is problematic in autoimmunity like psoriasis, but even the removal of goat and sheep's milk products. Because even that casein is bothersome.
Hmm.
And not until the dairy is completely gone do I see psoriasis get better in many of our patients.
We do find that there are natural approaches for psoriasis that are very effective. Mm-hmm. So, topic for another time.
Yeah. Carrie, thank you very much for your question. All right. So, we've got an email from Bart. Many people are trying to lower their inflammation with herbs and supplements. However, it seems inflammation is vital in healing.
Mm-hmm.
You need inflammation to help an injury to heal faster.
Correct.
So I'm wondering, can you over-control inflammation with supplements?
So this is an interesting question, and I'll tell you how the practical import of this question is. When I broke my hip, I was in a lot of pain. And so my surgeon prescribed powerful opiate-based pain killers.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got Furoset, which is furanol with Tylenol together. Mm-hmm. Furanol is synthetic opiate.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, after a while, I didn't need that, but I still had pain. And I said, you know, on a subsequent visit, I said, you know, what shall I take, Tylenol or Advil for my pain? Because I could just take something over the counter. And he said, don't take any Advil, the NSAIDs. Now, this was just at a time where he was a little forward-thinking because even now there's some doctors who tell patients with fractures it's okay to use non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, but they're anti-inflammatory, thus they impair bone healing and union. So you actually get some retardation of wound healing or bone healing. Inflammation brings blood to the area.
Mm-hmm. That's why it gets swollen when you cut yourself.
Right,
yes.
And that's an appropriate reaction to an injury. So if you reduce your inflammation, you actually can sometimes retard healing. So now
I've never heard this. This is fascinating.
Yeah, it's important. So now, when it comes to the natural anti-inflammatories, they are far less powerful, frankly, than Advil. They also don't have a laser-like effect on one inflammatory pathway, which is the target of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. They're what are called COX inhibitors or COX-2 inhibitors in case of prescription drugs. So that COX pathway is not completely blunted when you take something like curcumin or when you take fish oil. Fish oil is a different pathway completely.
Yeah.
And so you were maybe, I would say, taming inflammation, but not completely inhibiting inflammation.
Yeah.
And I don't really see a retardation of wound healing. This is actually something that I consoled myself with when I had, there were days when I'd have, like, I thought my pain was gone, and then the pain would come roaring back, and I would, in my head, I'd sort of reconfigure that. Instead of thinking, oh my God, I'm not healing, I would say, my white blood cells and my healing army in my body is really going to work today. So, you know, suck it up. It's not a bad sign. And surely
healing
this will
pain.
Abate. Yeah.
Wow. Like having a fever.
Yeah. 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 But so good question. You know, this actually pertains to an argument about antioxidants. It's a different question, but antioxidants have been thought to, in some ways, impair some of the body's mechanisms which respond to free radicals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you completely quench your free radicals, maybe you don't induce the body's own free radical machinery. This is a theoretical argument. There's some experimental evidence that suggests that overdoing antioxidants with the body Mm-hmm. And this is an ongoing controversy because I really believe in the benefits of antioxidants, and
yes.
I take them to
as
a high degree.
Yeah.
I take vitamin E. I think there's one question about what supplements we take, 400 international units each day, plus what's in my multi, and I take a lot of antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even thought that it may interfere with athletic training because part of the, you generate a lot of free radicals in athletic training.
Yes.
But if you use the antioxidants while you're training, it's supposed to be quench the free radicals. Free radicals don't have a chance to induce your body's repair and muscle development.
Mm.
I've heard that argument, but, you know, maybe if that's the case, I don't know. I'm doing fine in my training.
There you go.
And,
well, there's your answer. Really?
Well, maybe I'd be an Olympian if I didn't take antioxidants. I don't know. I mean, who knows? I don't think so.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure not.
Yeah.
But it's one of those arguments, you know, there are these controversies mm-hmm. in nutrition. And I think this questioner has put their finger on one of them.
Yeah. Yes, Bart. Thank you for this very, very thoughtful question. Wow.
And Bart, stop bothering your father, Homer.
Okay.
Okay. That's all the time for this segment of, we divide these podcasts in two parts as the listeners know. And when we come back, Layla, give us a tease to what we're going to tackle in part two.
I have sleep apnea, but I sleep better without my CPAP machine. What should I do?
All right. That's the subject for part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast, our weekly Q&A with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.